I think this will be the only talk with the word experimental in the title, and so I will spend some time talking about some measurements and experiments that we've done that are both driving the models that we've come up with and corroborating the models. So this is joint work, two postdocs who were formerly at Rice, Omer, Gurevich, and Vincenzo Mancuso, and also two students, Joseph Camp and Jingpu Shi. So there's an experimental platform that was driving this aspect of modeling that I'll talk about today, and many of the modeling projects that my group has been doing lately. And that's a large-scale multi-hop wireless network that we've deployed in Houston. We call it the Technology for All network. It's deployed in a lower-income neighborhood of Houston. But the main thing for research is that it's a programmable and observable platform, so we can watch every single packet, channel characteristics, whatever it is we want to know about the network, we are able to observe it, and then we can program it. When we see things go wrong and we think we have a solution, we can change the protocol. So we've basically been the wireless ISP for this region since late 2004, and as of now we have well over 4,000 users in 3 square kilometers. So what I want to do is just spend a minute talking to you about the architecture of this network, because that's again going to drive the model. So we're going to focus the models on this particular network. So three slides on what the architecture looks like. The first part is the access tier, and that's here very much like what a wireless. So what this is showing here is an antenna on a 30-foot mast that's in the neighborhood. And clients nearby on the right are apartments or vehicles, mobile clients, access that via 802.11. So that the access tier is very much like wireless LANs. Where things get interesting is the backhaul tier, and this is the tier from which the name mesh networks derive, because the topology is a general mesh. And so in this case, the antennas, which are located on roofs, rooftops, all of these are antennas in the neighborhood, are interconnected via 802.11b, and then they eventually aggregate at a single point, which is the fiber. So this is the tier where most of the research is on. There's a third tier in large-scale networks called capacity injection tier, which to cover 3 square kilometers, we couldn't just keep on multi-hopping to a single fiber. We would run out of enough capacity. We wouldn't have enough megabits per second per unit area or per user. So we have capacity in the network. We can't run a fiber because it's prohibitive with cost. So the technology that we use are point-to-point directional links shown here to get back to the fiber gateway. Commercial networks often use 802.16-like technology for this as well. But the point is, it's either a collection of point-to-point links or a point-to-multipoint. So this is the topology in the neighborhood. Let's see. So this G right here is the gateway, and the black lines are these directional links. So you saw a picture early on in the YMCA. That's right here. And so there's a directional link there. And so basically, if you live in the middle of this neighborhood, you wirelessly access, and then you multi-hop, and then you hit a directional link. And so this type of architecture is the ones when you hear about a large-scale city deployment, Taipei or Mountain View, this should be what's in your mind, but replicated many, many times. There's a very small number of true fiber gateways there are three tiers in it. So in our case, we have B-access, A-directional tier, multi-radios at gateways, single radios elsewhere, and about 3 out of these 4 square kilometers covered right now. So that's the context. So when we try to do modeling or trying to do protocol design, at least in this talk, we have this system in mind. Okay, so here's the challenge that we formulated to ourselves, that can we predict the flow throughput for congestion control traffic, or even fully backlogged traffic for that matter is a challenge. And can flows starve, meaning get near zero throughput? And if so, can we identify which flows would be starving, why they're starving, and can we do things to counter that? And a lot of this has, of course, practical applications for us for operations like network management, that we want to, if we could take some action to prevent a flow from starving, then clearly we want our network management protocols to do that. So can we identify them and take corrective action? So some prior work, some of the work that we did on starvation dates back a few years now, and you know, one of the things we had seen in the community was a lot of work on mobile ad hoc networks where you would see per flow throughputs and you'd see them. It wasn't exactly fair, but you'd see some deviation, but you would never see a whole bunch of flows getting zero. And the reason was is that if they were temporarily getting no throughput, well, it was a mobile ad hoc network, so eventually you move to a place where you're not starving and you get some throughput. So on average, everyone's doing fine. Well, this is a static network. The backhaul does not move. And so if you're starving, you're permanently starving, and obviously you have a severe problem. So we set out to model that for fully backlogged flows. And this is an example. If you have a random network, this is what the model predicts, the blue and the red, or the model and the simulation for the flow throughput. This is for the fully backlogged case. And as you can see, there's a tail out here of zero throughput. And it's not just because they're contending with a lot of neighbors. If we had a neighborhood-based contention, you'd see a much, much more smooth curve. Okay, so, but this model, we didn't put congestion control on top of it. We didn't have any aggregation of flows. There's no gateways. This is just single-tier random network, so it didn't quite answer the questions that we had in mind. Now, our traffic is using TCP, so we looked to what had been written about TCP over multi-hop wireless. And probably many of you have heard people express opinions that it's well known that it doesn't work very well. And so papers expressing that date back some years now. And some examples are shown here. So it's shown that any problems that you have at the MAC layer, TCP can magnify those problems, make it worse. And again, within the TCP context, some solutions have been suggested. As an example, looking at chain topologies, the first one was suggesting that, well, if you get the TCP window right, then you'll eliminate self-contention. So if you have a large TCP window, many packets go into a chain, they collide with each other, and the throughput collapses. So this first paper and the second paper were really based on the premise, get that congestion window right, and then you'll be able to achieve your congestion control objectives. Likewise, other work saying, well, if we can get those ACKs right, if the ACKs go back in the right rate, then that will throttle down the users to the fair rate that you want. Okay, so what I'll try to convince you today is that our understanding of why TCP over multi-hop CSMA fails is not correct. It's not all about what that congestion window is. And consequently, some of the solutions that have been proposed are not effective. And as an example, this pacing issue, so it's believed that if you can just get this pacing right correct, this pacing rate correct, then you'll be able to achieve your fairness objectives. In fact, some papers suggest to just leave the rate one, leave the window one. You'll never get much faster than that, so just leave it at one. So we'll show you that you can have starvation if you have a sliding window protocol and you leave the window of one. or you make it 2, or you make it 3. Choose a fixed window. You'll still SAR. And we'll show that individual or aggregate one-hop flows can starve multi-hop flows. Okay, so the scenario I want to look at, so I showed you this crazy-looking topology, and then this is the topology we're going to look at for most of the paper, and then we'll come back and I'll try to convince you that this that our results apply to more general topologies. So we're going to look at this topology for now, where we have a gateway here, and then we have a node in the middle, and then a second node here. And so this we consider the minimal mesh network. So if there's no multi-hopping, it's not a mesh network. It's a wireless LAN. And so we have to have this multi-hopping, and also we have the concept of a gateway in a mesh network. So we're not having random traffic matrices where anyone's communicating with anyone else, but the majority, or in many cases all of the traffic, is going to or from the gateway. So we'll consider this scenario, and then we'll generalize later. So we have TCP data, a two-hop flow, and a one-hop flow, and then of course we have the ACK traffic coming back. So let's look at that scenario. Okay, so here's an experiment that we did on the Technology for All network, where we generated a two-hop flow and a one-hop flow with TCP. We did this at 3 in the morning when there wasn't other traffic, so we basically generated fully backlogged traffic. We don't allow the users to do that. The users are individually limited. So this would be representative of the case of a larger number of users. So we generated two-hop and one-hop traffic. And so if I only have TCP, the one-hop flow can get 4 megabits per second. The two-hop flow can get a little bit over 1 when they're isolated, when they're not active at the same time. Now turn these two flows on at the same time, and then look what happens. The one-hop flow continues, just loses a little bit. It's getting over 3-point-something megabits per second. And this is what we call starvation. The two-hop flow is getting 50 kilobits per second or so. So there's the problem. And a lot of the prior work just considered one flow at a time or random traffic matrices, so you don't see this effect of flows interacting. A lot of prior work, including our own, the one I mentioned before. So our earlier prior work had only one-hop flows and didn't have this aggregation effect. So that's starvation. That's RTS, CTS disabled. And then many people will say, well, you know, there's a hidden terminal in there, so turn on RTS, CTS, and everything's fixed. And so just to show you that's not the case, here's turn on RTS, CTS, and you get the same effect. So it's not as simple as fixed as addressing hidden terminals. Okay, so the moral of the story is the two-hop flow starves when it's contending with the one-hop flow. Okay, so why? So there are three effects of starvation that that I'm going to talk about in the next couple slides. And so this is the overview of those three. And so I'll zoom in the next few slides. But just to give you all the three factors here at once. So the first is in the medium access protocol. So this is either pure CSMA or CSMA with RTS-CTS handshake. There's a symmetric bistability. So what's going to happen is one node captures the resources. Actually, one pair of nodes captures the resources, and then another pair. Then another pair, and another pair. It's symmetric, though. But bistable, meaning it will stay in that state for multiple packets. It's a MAC layer capture. The transport protocol puts in an asymmetry, a very strong asymmetry. And it's not just RTT-based asymmetry. It's very different than that, and we'll see why the transport protocol brings in that asymmetry in a moment. And then that asymmetry is compounded by cross-layer effects, that when you switch states, there's a penalty to switch the states. And one side gets a severe penalty, the other side gets a small penalty. So it's a combination of this asymmetry and then the severe penalty. Okay, so let's go into each of those. So medium access and biostability. The easiest way to look at this is to look at the subflow. Look at the data flow coming here and the ACK flow going there, and you'll say A and gateway are out of range, so we have hidden terminals. So what's going to happen when they simultaneously contend? Well, this is fair. A and gateway are both mutually hidden, so their long-term throughputs of this and this would be identical if they're both continuously backlogged. So it's a fair situation. But it's bistable in that what will happen is when they first contend, with or without RTS-CTS, you'll get some collisions because they're hidden. But then eventually somebody transmits data or transmits an RTS. And that packet gets transmitted. But because it took a few collisions to resolve this, after that data packet, the transmitter that got the medium, let's say that was A, if A got the medium, then after it goes idle, it starts afresh with a new backoff counter. Whereas whoever lost, let's say it was the gateway, has to resume its backoff counter from previously. That's part of the binary exponential backoff protocol, that you have to retain that value. Because of that, the previous winner is likely to win again. And win again and win again, and it only will lose once the loser drops a packet. Because when the loser drops a packet, then it competes fairly. Okay, so this is bistable and it's symmetric. And so what ends up happening is, depending on how all these parameters are set, you capture the channel for maybe 10 packets at a time in that range. Okay. Now, there's actually, that wasn't the full picture. There's some other subflows going in here. So the middle flow B is actually going to interleave with whoever wins. So if A wins, B interleaves with A. When the gateway wins, B interleaves with B. So the middle node can always transmit. It's fine, and that's because it can sense both sides. So it's in the favorable position here. Okay. Now let's get to TCP and what TCP does. And really, some of this discussion just really means sliding window. So what happens here? We have two nested loops, and so there's the loop between B in the gateway and then A in the gateway, and both are doing the sliding window protocol. Now, suppose A captures the medium. So A won this game. Now, A has the medium, and it can send a bunch of data packets. But to send another data packet, it has to have an acknowledgement. And unfortunately for A, it is going to run out of acknowledgements, because to get an acknowledgement, the gateway has to win. So A's burst size is severely limited due to the requirement of the sliding window. You have to have an ACK to send a data packet. So that's going to break this outer loop. The inner loop is self-sustaining. B gateway, that can self-sustain, because every time there's a data packet, the gateway can send an ACK, because those two nodes, whenever gateway captures, B interleaves. So this loop self-sustains. This one runs out because the ACKs can't get back. So that's where the asymmetry arises. Now, then we had bistability, but now we're going to have weighted bistability. And now there's a question of, when we switch states, how much does it cost? Well, if each time it switches you lose a packet, no big deal. TCP loses packets all the time and quickly recovers. And that's what happens with the gateway. There's a small penalty that you have a short duration of a fail state, but you had a long duration of packet burst. So your fail state duration is short because the suffering node is going to run out of packets to send quickly. It can't send any more data packets because it's out, because its congestion window is limited. Okay, so But A gets this high penalty. First a MAC penalty, it's got a retry, retry, drop, and then a TCP penalty, retry, retry, and so on. So it's a long time before it can recover. Here you're seeing 15 seconds. I mean, that is a ridiculously long time for an outage by the time that recovers. So it's binary exponential backup at two time scales, MAC and then congestion control. Okay, so now how do we capture this? So what we wanted to do was just isolate the root cause of starvation and put in the model what the minimal components were in order to have this phenomena arise, and then go back to the experiments and see whether we were able to predict it, whether any solutions can come out of it. So what we did is one aspect of congestion control, the sliding window. So we'll call it congestion control. This is really just a sliding window protocol with a fixed window size. We'll experiment with different window sizes, but we'll keep it fixed. Queues in the system and CSMA with or without the RTS CTF. So the full random access, carrier sends, binary exponential backoff, and all of that. We'll do this with an embedded Markov chain model that has these states that I mentioned. So roughly what's happening is that at each of the nodes has a random access model to it. And then there's also queue states for all the subflows. So for example, going from the gateway to B are two subflows, the ACK for B itself and then the ACK for flow A, which is then going to be forwarded there. So that's what the model is keeping track of. Okay. So then we went back to both TFA and also to simulations to see could this model capture these effects. And so the green are the throughput ratios measured in TFA. So B to the gateway, the winning flow, just under 3 megabits per second, and then a hundred or so kilobits per second here. And then the model is this one here. And so we're capturing this severe ratio, but it's much worse in practice. Why is it worse? Well, we had a fixed congestion control window. In this case, the window is fixed to 3, depending on what you have with that. We did a simulation where we changed TCP to actually force the window to also be fixed. And that's what this first simulation bar is. And then we did other simulations with the full-blown TCP to get that other simulation bar. So that gives us a sense of which factors. There's a sliding window factor that's already giving you starvation, and then it's made worse by these other things. Put full TCP on it, it's worse. Put the real channels of TFA, the fading, and other interaction of other nodes and so on. Okay. So what next? So we showed that that starvation exists in the actual network and that CSMA plus the sliding window protocol are sufficient to induce it. So the question, what can we do to fix this? And so the model helps us there because it can show us where all the queues are and how those queues induce the MAC byte stability. So if you recall the origins, the three aspects are MAC byte stability, flow control inducing asymmetry, and then the severe state transition penalties. So can we mitigate this MAC byte stability? Well, I mentioned it was inherent in the topology RTS, CTS on or off, but one of the things that you need in order for this to happen is to actually have backlog at the two nodes to have queues. So what if we redistribute this distributed queue? We have packets queued at A, B in the gateway, and how can we decrease the steady state probability where these two are simultaneously queued? Because that's really the origins of the bistability. So we have this fixed topology here, and the model can tell us how to move these queues around, and it can tell us what the medium access protocol can do to mitigate this. So in particular, the middle node, if we have the middle node access the medium less aggressively, then the queues will shift. And so basically we'll take the queues that are existing on the outer points here and shift them into B. And B, remember we saw how B was able to always send the medium and contend fairly. So the way the particular policy we'll explore is increasing the minimum contention window for the middle node. So here's a graph. This is a model graph to show what happens when we do this, and we'll use numerical examples analogous to the experimental setup. So I'll have these outer flows have a minimum contention window of 32, and then the middle flow will increase its contention window, and we'll see how this has a decrease. Here, when all three are the same with probability 0.6, there were queues here and here, and that's what kept bringing us into that bistable state. We keep increasing it, and that probability trails off to zero. Okay, so let's see how this works in terms of throughput. Okay, we can shift around the queues, but what did that do with the throughput? Did we kill our throughput? Did we kill our utilization? Did we achieve fairness? What happened? So here's a graph showing the result in throughput. So this result here for 32 is what we had initially, that all nodes are contending with the same contention windows. As we go to the right here, the middle node is becoming less and less aggressive in accessing the medium, which is reflected by increasing its minimum contention window. And so the middle node increasing its minimum contention window then has the effect of distributing the bandwidth fairly. So when the middle node has 128, then we have very close to achieving the same rates. And so this policy 32, 128, 32 is very close to fair for this network. Okay, so the policy that we're exploring is in which all nodes directly connected to the gateway increase their minimum contention value to one significantly greater than the other nodes. And what those ratios should be and so on were part of the modeling work that we did, and that I won't go into details now. But the points I wanted to make was that it's simple to implement, so there's no messaging. One of the things that the standard did for 802.11s is design a protocol where you can send messages among nodes to say increase, decrease, and so on. And so this is a way to achieve your congestion control objectives without that messaging. And EDCA, the 802.11, supports this sort of functionality anyway. One of the points I wanted to make is it's exploits the aspect of having a known topology. So we know the topology, we know you're multi-hopping towards the gateway, so using that and knowing how congestion control works, you're able to design this MAC policy. Okay, so some more experimental validation. This is back here's again the case. The original case here is on the left. The two-hop flow gets almost nothing. The one-hop flow gets above 4 megabits per second. In this experiment, we increase it to 128, and then you're getting closer to fairness, and then to 256, and you're getting almost exact fairness. And then the total, now utilization here, we should call this used airtime, I think would perhaps be more accurate. Whenever you serve the two-hop flow instead of the one-hop flow, the sum of these two rates is lower, right? So if you want to sum the rates, this left one has the highest sum, right? So if that's your objective, then this was the optimal thing to do, right? So here we have lower sum of the rates and also here, but the scaled airtime is still quite high. So fairness can be achieved. Whether you want max min fair, proportional fair, you decide it, and that's going to decide how far out you go with with the middle notes. Okay, so we looked at some broader scenarios that I'm not going to go into today, upstream, downstream, and so on. I think what's most of interest actually is multiple branches. And so, obviously, in our original network, we have a large fan out. And so, here I've just showed a single branch of the tree. And so, what we found there was that the aggregate of all the single nodes, single hop flows, would cause starvation. And so, the key was how can you control that aggregate when they're not explicitly cooperating. And so this we found to be a very effective solution for multiple branches. We looked at aggregation and so on. So the point is we did confirm that the starvation phenomena exists in much broader scenarios. We focus our modeling on the simple case, but we did validation in more general topologies. Okay, so to summarize, one hop flows interacting flow or flows interacting with two hop flows is sufficient to induce starvation. Certainly, the potential is there for this to occur. You can do a simple experiment. You don't need an operational mesh network, actually. We were working with Cisco and told them about this phenomenon, and they said that would never happen in Cisco products. Wait, am I being recorded before I tell the story? Yes? Can I edit it? Anyway, they said it would never happen, but we assured them that it would, and to just please try it. And sure enough, they came back and said, yes, it did happen. So this is something where you can take three laptops, set up two TCP flows, and you'll see it happen. I guarantee it to you just like I did to Cisco. So it really is a real problem. Let's see. And so it's a joint effect of MAC and transport layer. And I know one of the problems that we often formulate are clean slate design. And that's if you could redesign the MAC and you could redesign the congestion control, what would you do? And I think you would do some very different things. But so here we formulated a different problem of keeping ourselves more constrained to what we had on the test bed itself. So that led us to a policy which we found simple to implement. Okay, well, I will stop there and be happy to take some questions. Thank you.